Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like...
Como una papa sin katsu.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kasho, kasho, kasho.
How are you, Babalex?
I am basting on this fucking snow crazy weather. How are you?
Wow, so interesting. Thank you for that. Oh my gosh, a bonus episode.
Yes.
That's right. We are, you know, we started a new format this year where we come out with an episode every other week. But guess what, Mimis? We're coming out with a bonus episode because I couldn't not share it on this feed. I know a lot of you know about my other podcast, the Art People Podcast. And recently, I got to interview City Councilor Julia Mejia, who is a fucking badass. She is an Afro-Latina agitator and activist. And she represents Boston now, City Council from Dorchester. And she won by one fucking vote. If you don't think your vote matters, people, it fucking matters. She won by one vote, and now she's in City Hall, you know, being a diva and just representing the Afro-Latino community, representing everybody, really. She is incredible.
Amazing, amazing, amazing interview. I was so fucking inspired to hear her story. The attention that she puts into our communities, different aspects of the communities, right? Not just to get a fucking vote, because she's part of those communities, is fascinating. You guys are in for a treat.
Without further ado, we're going to go right into the Art People Podcast. And you can subscribe to the Art People Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm really excited about where the Art People Podcast is going this year. I'm happy to announce that I actually am going to do a podcasting residency in Northwest Arkansas at the Momentary, which is this new museum that's opening up this week, actually. And so
sweet.
I'm going to do a lot of podcasting in Northwest Arkansas. So if you are a Latino or, you know, an art person in Bentonville, Springdale, Rogers, Fayetteville, any of those Northwest Arkansas towns, and you're a podcaster, please reach out. I want to do some collaborations. I want to get to know everybody there. I've been there plenty of times because of different projects that I've done with the museums out there, but this time it's like for real and it's funded, and I'm so excited to basically live in Arkansas for 2 months and podcast. So just a quick announcement to everybody out there. I've already found a couple podcasts that I'm going to work with. But back to Julia Mejia, you are incredible.
Amazing.
Yes, without further ado, for real this time, here is her episode of the Art People Podcast. Hi, I'm Justin Favela, and this is the Art People Podcast. It's the podcast about art, people. Get it? Okay. On this show, I bring you the conversations I have with art people in my hometown of Las Vegas and the folks I get to meet on my travels around the world. Last week, I had the honor of interviewing Afro-Latina, agitator, activist, and Boston City Councilor, Julia Mejia. Listen in as we talk about growing up in Boston, her path to becoming a city councilor, the act of calling people in, the importance of art and communication, and so much more. Now, sit back, relax, and let me take you back to this past Friday at Boston City Hall.
You guys are too much. Oh, guys, come take a picture of this. Look at this, is legit. We need this.
Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, Julia.
Close the door because I don't want everybody to think that I'm such a diva.
All right, we're here.
We're here in City Hall.
In City Hall.
In Boston.
Oh my gosh, with none other than Julia Mejia. And I just met you
a few days ago.
Just a few days ago, and you. were at one of my art openings. I did a public art piece at the Prudential Center about the Latinx community. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that you were there to flip the switch with me and introduce Boston to that piece about Latinx representation. Right. And, you know, I've been coming to Boston for many years and to visit my friends, most of my white friends that live here, you know. And I'm like, where's the color?
I know.
You know what I mean? And so, where's the Latinos?
Right.
And when I started doing research about the demographics, I realized, like, they're everywhere.
Yeah. And we're the fastest growing population here in the city of Boston.
Yeah.
And as a Latina, I came to this country in the, I look good for my age. So I was here in the early 70s, just so you know, I can be your mom, but I look good. Anyways, I digressed. And I came to this city at a time where they didn't want us here. Mm. It was a lot of go back to your country. I didn't speak English. I had to learn how to speak English watching Sesame Street. My mom did spend some time where she was undocumented. So I became the official advocate and the translator for everyone in my neighborhood. So I would be the one kid that would go with everyone to the welfare office, to the court, to the doctor's appointments, because they knew if they brought me along, they were going to get what they were looking for. And I have an award-winning personality. So I would utilize that to let people know about themselves, right? And so early on, I knew that as a Latina, navigating the city was always going to have its challenges for me. And so running for office and becoming the first Latina is quite embarrassing that, you know, the city hall has been around for X amount of hundreds of years and we've never had a Latina on the council. Speaks volumes to how much work we need to do in terms of representation here in the city of Boston.
Absolutely. And something powerful you said, and you made sure to tell everybody when you were speaking the other night, was the first Afro-Latina, right? Mm-hmm. You're the first Afro-Latina to be elected too, which is a big deal, I think, because, you know, as a Latino that makes art about Latinx representation, there's a lot of erasure when it comes to Central American Latinos.
That's right.
And then especially Afro-Latinos.
Yeah. You know, anything that has a little bit of tint.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that for me, I grew up in the Dominican Republic. I mean, I was born in the Dominican Republic and I grew up here in Boston, but Caribbean countries and even some indigenous countries, you know, indigenous people forget their roots. And I think that colorism and colonialism has pushed us in that direction. It's better to just kind of like go along and get along, and the more light skinned you are, the easier your life is. And even though I prescribe to that, I'm light skinned, I know that the struggle for our people is real, right? So making sure that we're celebrating our Black roots, our indigenous roots, is really important to me.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been reading all about you, and I'm a big fan of you now. You know, you grew up in Dorchester, and I know that you still live there.
Yeah.
And you're still repping
that
side of town,
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yes.
And so I grew up in Dorchester, and I became the first person in my family to graduate high school, go to college, buy a house, get my mom out of Section 8, and I bought a house in my neighborhood where I grew up. And it was really I had to take out, no lie though, I didn't even know what my credit score was at the time, but the person who bought my mom's house, the apartment that she lived in, they were going to increase the rent to a point that my mom's Section 8 voucher wasn't going to be enough. So I told my mom, I'm going to buy you a house. At the time, like I said, I didn't even know what my credit score was. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew that I had to do something because I didn't want my mom to have to worry about housing anymore. And so we pulled our resources together. I took out my entire 401k and we bought a two-family, but we all live there. My brother, you know how it is, Latinos, we all pack it in, right? My brother and I live, we share one space together, and my mom has the other side. But we made it happen. And, you know, for me to buy a house in the neighborhood that I grew up in, and I still dodge bullets. I didn't go out to the suburbs. Like, whenever I go to a local, we call them bodegas around here, like little corner stores. When I'm with my daughter, she's 9 years old, I've been training her to live in fear, because when I open up the door, I look both ways, and if there's no commotion, then I say, okay, we can leave the store right now. So I live in the neighborhood that I represent, and the issues that I talk about are things that I'm living as a single mom myself right now. Yeah. You know, it's not hypothetical. I didn't read about it in a book. This is right now my reality, and so I think that that's the type of representation that people are really excited about.
Yeah, and I think that's who we need representing us, and just learning from how I think that sparked your activism, right? Just like being part of that community, kind of being this person that helped kind of bridge the gap between a lot of community members in Dorchester when they needed help. It kind of, it fueled your career, right?
Yeah.
As a counselor now.
Yeah, and you know, I had dropped out of school and then I went back. And it was Liz Walker, who was the first African-American news anchor, who went to my high school and shared her story about what life was like for her. And I was so inspired by her story that I decided to graduate high school and go to college. And the reason why I say this is because we're talking, just to hit upon the arts, is that no one ever talked to me about college. I never knew what I was going to do. I was selling shoes and cleaning offices, making more money than my mom did, right? Mm. But here this was, this woman who shared her art craft, and that's the art of communication. And I realized that there was something that I could do, that I could aspire to do. And that's the only reason why I am here today, is because she interrupted my entire cycle of poverty just by sharing her story. So I utilized video as a tool to help young people deal with their anger. So while all of my friends were doing their internships at news stations and at the, you know, at the newspapers and PR firms, I was at a Boys and Girls Club working with teens and utilizing video to teach them how to deal with their anger. And I've been a fan of the arts ever since, because it was my outlet, right? It was my way out of poverty. And a lot of kids who grow up with nothing, I think we know how to work what we have.
Yes.
You know, I made a dollhouse out of a Pamper box when I was a kid. Everybody had their little Barbie dollhouses, and I had a Pamper box. But I made it happen, right? And I think, for me, I think that the arts are really important. It's an outlet. Reading was my escape from my reality. Writing was too. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm all about the arts.
And visual arts. They were telling me yesterday that you started a gallery in your office.
Yes.
You said, I'm going to surround myself
with good art. You got some
good... You know I'm stalking you now. Oh, I'm telling you.
Yeah, so, you know, in our campaign office, we had these amazing, beautiful wall space, right? And what I decided to do was open up my space to local artists so that they can showcase. Because black and brown folks, we don't go to galleries, you know? And if we do, it's like, oh, my God, it was by mistake, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to create an opportunity for local artists to utilize our space to showcase their work. And I think that it was setting the tone for what it looks like to be a good neighbor. And we did it for visual artists. We did it for young people who are doing album debuts. We did open mics. We were really intentional about creating art. And we'll do it here in our office, in our City Hall office. I will be reaching out to local artists to showcase their work here and utilize our space to showcase. I think that is how we celebrate art.
I love people that encourage visual art and public art, because in a way it creates a safe space.
That's right.
And right now, in a time that, you know, sanctuary spaces are really important, you know, art can also do that for people that maybe feel alone or feel like they're not seen.
Yeah.
Having a gallery space like that, or encouraging the arts, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And that can move on to, you know, having Boston be an official sanctuary space, which I know you are.
I propose
that.
You did some really good research, Justin. I see you. Yeah, so, you know, I just came into office a few weeks ago, and one of the first things that I proposed was sanctuary safe spaces, and to define for ourselves what they look like.
Yeah.
Because Boston claims to be such, but there's really no reinforcement of what that looks like and what can ICE get away with or not. And because my mom was undocumented, this for me is near and dear, right?
Yeah.
And I work with a lot of families who are still undocumented today. And so I think that art can play a beautiful role in that realm. And I'm also thinking about sanctuary spaces, not just in public schools, but libraries, health centers. There's so many public spaces that I think that we can do a better job at protecting our most vulnerable, and those are people who are undocumented.
Sure. And I mean, it's just, I didn't know the impact of having such a colorful artwork at the Prudential until...
You know how cool that is, that you're there? Oh my God. You guys have to understand, you have to take pictures and put it over this voice right now. But like, to walk around that area, which is all hidey-tidey, mm-hmm. hoity-toity, that's where the money is. Mm-hmm. But that our people walk through that space every single day, people who are working there, people who are free, you know, who are traveling by there, to see your art displayed so colorfully is such a beautiful thing. And I'm so glad that that's where they decided to post it and share it. So thank you. And the pinatas, of all things, you know, we grew up with our pinatas. Party time.
And it's, But then, like, coming here to City Hall, I'm like, oh, my God, everything is so gray here.
I know.
Like, literally, there's no color, you know?
I know.
And so, yeah, I'm excited.
So we're going to bring you here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see more public art in Boston. Yeah. And just, you know, because visibility leads to representation.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Because a lot of institutions think, like, oh, you know what? We gave this guy a chance. We put his art up in the Pru. We let this counselor speak, so we checked a box, you know? And a lot of times, as a person of color, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like a prop sometimes.
That's right.
And I'm like, are we really making a difference, or you're just making us feel that way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So how can we
own it,
actually change things?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that some of the things that we did during our campaign was about that, mm-hmm. and in reclaiming spaces.
Yeah, and giving people the kind of like the power to know that they have the power.
And we always have, because let me tell you, to be honest with you, what they do is they package up our swag and then they sell it to us.
Oh my gosh.
Right? I don't even know who you are. I don't know who you are. I'm just letting your audience know that. I mean, they might not agree with my philosophy, but yeah, I'm just letting you all know, yo, they package us up and they sell us. To ourselves, right? And so we have so much more that that we allow ourselves to believe, right? And I always say we're not as hopeless or as helpless as people have led us to believe, and there's always strength in our struggle.
Yeah.
And I think through the arts is such a great way for us to showcase that. And, you know, writing was when I was a kid, you know, I struggled with depression, right? You know, it was hard for me.
I still do.
Right? Right? And so writing was a form of therapy for me.
Yeah.
And it still is, right? And I think that we have to celebrate the arts more. And that's the first thing that they take away in the public schools. They take away the arts. They take away the things that are help us feel better about ourselves, you know?
Yeah, making us feel like individuals and giving us agency and the hope that we can do whatever
That's
we
right.
want to do, you
That's
know?
That's right.
And I know you've given a lot of people hope, and I really appreciate your work doing that. I read a little bit about some of the organizations you helped create. Can you tell me a little bit about Determined Divas?
Yes.
Please.
We're such divas.
Uh-huh.
So back in 2015... I was getting to the point where I was tired of elected officials knocking on my door, asking me for their vote. And then we don't see them after the elections, right? So I was part of this organization called Family Independence Initiative. And I applied for a small little social impact grant to launch this initiative. And it's a volunteer-led. All the grant did was pay for the food and the location and, you know, just logistics, stuff like that. It was a nonprofit. It was a volunteer-led initiative. It's not a organization. But we really made a name for ourselves. Like, we created space for people who had never engaged in the political conversation to work in collaboration with elected officials. And what we would do is, instead of allowing elected officials to sit on panels and looking all cute, what we did is our elected official dialogues were speed dating. And we would have them facilitate their own conversations.
Oh, my God.
And so we wanted them to recognize that they work for us. And it wasn't them doing us any favors. It's that we were here to... I did that intentionally to level the playing field.
Yeah.
So that the constituents that were coming in knew that this was a collaborative conversation and that there was not this us versus them or that one person had power over the other. So yeah. That really created the type of environment where elected officials and constituents could be in the same space, having the same conversation. And through that work, I met Ayanna Pressley, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley mm-hmm. today. And there were times when she would come into our spaces when we would host different types of dialogues, where she wasn't even slated to speak, but she would show up because she knew in our space, we always had we had real talk. Yeah. And no one was paying us. We were doing this because we wanted to. We registered thousands of people to vote. And this was all because that we were tired and we wanted to change the way we did things in Boston. And then I also launched a nonprofit, which I was the founder and the executive director of, a nonprofit called C-Plan, which is the Collaborative Parent Leadership Action Network. And that came at a time when there was a big divide between district and charter parents. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create space for parents to have one conversation because we knew no matter where our kids ended up, there was work to do. And so we do parent leadership development. So we train parents on how to become more engaged in their school. And then we work with the schools so that they can culturally responsibly receive us in ways that would make sense. So we provide training. It's a dual capacity model. But when I won the election... and I didn't create the organization so that I can always be the leader of it. I created it so that it can grow on its own, and that's what real organizing is about. So we have two of our founding members that are now the executive directors of our organization.
Oh my gosh, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, but since I was a kid, though, I've always been engaged, you know?
Yeah.
Formally or informally, in every space that I've been, I felt like I've had to knock down. I worked at MTV, if you read anything about me.
I did, yes. As a political correspondent
for MTV. I was a first-time reporter covering the presidential elections.
What years were those? It was
for 2000. That was a lot. I told you, I got good melanin. it was in 2000 that I covered that presidential election, and then I worked at MTV for 10 years as a producer.
Oh, wow. 10 years.
10 years, and I had to fight for every story that I pitched.
Yeah.
But here I am. I changed the way they reported on issues that were impacting black and brown folks. I did a story about the census. I did a lot of stuff around representation. So, you know, I've always been this way, you know, and I feel like running and winning, and, you know, we only...
You got to tell me this story. Oh, you won God. By one vote.
I know.
So if you don't think your vote matters...
I am the Brady...
This is historic, yeah.
Brady, who's part of our team, said that I was the one vote wonder.
Wow. Tell me that story.
So let me just tell you. First of all, we set out... to do this campaign in a way that was really grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because we wanted it to, it was because we had to. We had less money than everyone else. We didn't have a lot of political backing. But I always said that I had rather have lost and uplifted our people than have won and neglected us along the way, because nobody really pays attention to black and brown communities, right? So we were in laundromats, hair salons, we were just out in these streets, and we would talk to everybody, even whether they were registered to vote or whether they were a voter or not, because this was really about engagement. And so we came in, there was 15 candidates in the primary, the first in September, and we went from 15 to one of the top eight, and I came in fifth. And there was the top four slots, go on, but I came in fifth out of the eight. So everybody was really surprised that for a first-time candidate, I was only a few thousand votes away from the top four vote-getters. I was surprised, too. But then November came, and we ended up, winning by 10 votes.
Yo.
That was crazy. I was even afraid to announce it or claim it. But we did. And then we found out that the margin was too tight, that we were going to go into a recount. And, you know, I was like, let's go. Because this is about democracy, right?
Yeah.
Let's go. Every vote matters. Let's make sure that it does.
Yes.
And so we headed into a recount.
How long did that take?
It was 3 weeks.
Oh my God. You must have been
The recount was lasted 3 days.
Oh, okay.
But leading up to it, we had to collect signatures.
Oh, right. You had to petition to do a recount in this state. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And, you know, we're in financial debt right now. Mm-hmm. as a result of it. But I will say that my lawyer who did my recount was the same lawyer who did the recount for Al Gore when he ran in 2000. Oh, so you want to talk about life coming in full circle. Mm-hmm. My life is full of full circles. So when the vote, the final vote was announced that night, my opponent, we went to bed with another cliffhanger that she was thinking about going to court. And at that point, you know, I had reached the point where I was like, you know, I was all good for the recount. I was all in. Let's go. It was democracy. But to take this now into the court system where people of color don't already believe in the court system, it just felt like we were gonna, it just didn't feel right to me. I was gonna go all in for the court. I was good for it, but it made me feel some kind of way. But what happened was is that there were a lot of people who were voting for the first time, because we engaged first-time voters. We engaged naturalized citizens that normally only vote for presidential races. And the way our ballot is composed, it says write name in. So some folks who filled out the ballot not only circled my name, but then they also wrote my name in. Mm. And that invalidated their vote.
Oh, no.
And so we had to fight for those votes.
I see.
And, you know, it really helped us understand how much work we need to do in educating first-time voters on actually how to fill out a ballot. They were enthusiastic. They were like, yo, we want her so bad, we're going to pick her and write her name in.
Cause that's right.
But, yeah, those ballots were going to be challenged in court. So yeah, because that was the will of the vote of the voter, and so you know it was. But I believe it was a blessing in disguise. I became the poster child of what every vote really means and how important it is. And no matter how nerve wracking it was, I mean, I went to bed not knowing whether or not I really won, and I never really felt like I had any real sense of resolution, because my election night party was kind of like, well, you won, but we're going to go into a recount. And then after the recount, well, you won, but it was only by, you know, it wasn't until I was walking down until the ceremony when I got sworn in, which I actually got sworn in the place where I became a naturalized citizen.
Wow.
So that was beautiful. But I had on, like, and no lie, I was strategic. I was like, I had like these big long eyelashes. I had my full face on because I was not going to cry, because I had been an emotional mess. I'd been crying ever since I really won. And I tried to contain myself, but I couldn't. Then they gave me a standing ovation, and I was just like, oh, I started crying like a baby. It's just been such an emotional journey, because things like this don't happen to people like me, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm here in City Hall, even if it's just by one vote, it just really makes me feel like if I can do this, we all can,
yes.
Right? And I'm a single mom, right? I grew up in a life of poverty, and here I am representing my people, and I was unapologetic about who I was here to serve, because I was not going to leave myself at the door so other people can feel comfortable.
Yes.
So I was coming in here to do the work. Mm-hmm. And so that journey here, I carry with me everywhere, and I kept thinking about all the people who I met along the way at the nail salons, at the laundromats, and I just kept thinking about who I was here to represent. And that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to do that work.
Yeah.
And I already, you know, if you've been following me, I got a little bit of, I got a hateful voicemail.
Ooh.
Do you hear about that?
Oh my gosh.
Did you see the video? I turned it around.
Now your experience with MTV makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is a very media savvy person. That was really powerful, what you did with that video.
That was my therapy.
Yeah.
When I heard it, I had to recycle that anger.
Yeah. So somebody sent you a really messed up voicemail attacking you and basically your integrity, your existence.
My existence.
A bully.
Yeah, a bully.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for us, it was like, you know, I think about everybody else, and it's not just, you know, immigrant communities. It's like there's so many groups that have been bullied and marginalized here in this country, LGBTQ, Jewish, you know, it's just so many folks who have bear the brunt of the new administration. And so for me, taking a stand was really important, and it was really about uplifting those voices, because when you're in an abusive relationship, you just take it and you don't say anything. That's how they keep doing it. So you're enabling that hate, and I felt like I needed to do something about it.
So you put this guy on blast.
Yeah.
And I love the way you did it. Swiftly and concisely and using the tools that we have today. You made a YouTube
media.
You put it on your Instagram. And you just, all you did was you took the voicemail and you cut in images of yourself, of your mother, of civil rights activists.
Yeah.
And it's really moving.
Thank
it's
you.
It's really moving. You
know he called me today?
Oh my gosh. Please tell me.
He did.
What happened?
I know, right? But he first called my, I wasn't here when earlier in the morning when he called. He spoke to my chief of staff and he spent 35 minutes on the phone with him and he turned around.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And I spoke to him and I felt, I'm so glad that he reached out. It took him a lot of courage to do that. And he apologized to me, to my mother. He told me that this is my country and that he could be a hothead sometimes, but he's 70 years old. He fought in the Vietnam combat, and he loves this country. And I told him I do too, you know, and we had a really good talk.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm glad that I did my video about calling people in.
Yes, can we talk about that?
Yeah, it wasn't about calling people out.
Yes.
That's the problem that we have.
In social media right now, it's
that's all we want to do is call mofos out.
Yes, and I've been talking about this because, you know, I'm friends with a lot of, you know, Chicanx, you know, like Aztec warrior people, not to make fun of them, but to make fun of them. And like, y'all call people, it's like, okay, we understand bullying is a problem online, but when you start calling people out like that
online,
you're also being a bully. Yeah. So calling people in, this is what it's about.
This is what it's about. And let me tell you is that this man called me a week ago, Friday, and I put this out on Wednesday, I think a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of calls because he calls in a lot. It's like, he was like, everyone recognized my voice and they were calling me. And I just need you to understand. Like, he wanted me to understand where he was coming from. And that is how you confront these issues. It's with compassion. And I think we're losing sight of that. That's why this world is so divided right now, because it's us versus them. And it doesn't have to be that way. And that's really what I want to change. And the fact that he called me today speaks volumes that me calling him in was a part of that.
Yeah. And I think a big factor in that is there was a moment in the video where there was all these children of color holding signs that says, I am human.
That's right.
He saw that. He saw your life in that video. Where you came from.
He saw my mom.
He saw your mom and her journey here.
Yeah.
It was relatable to him.
He told me that his parents, that he was Irish descent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he understood it. He understood. And that to me was great too, because he understood it. I was so moved by the fact that he called. I was shocked too. I was like, yo, no one's going to believe this. I didn't believe it, right? I'm like, this is weird. But I feel like everything in my life has never been a coincidence. And I believe that everything, even winning by one vote, who would have believed something like that would happen? I just think that right now we're at a time that if we don't act with urgency and if we don't lead with love, and if we're not really intentional about how we create space for people, then we're going to find ourselves in some really bad situation because we never took a moment to pause.
Yeah.
Because we're screaming and yelling, we're not hearing. And we have to stop because that's not going to get us anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's my hope. I'm bringing developers into the conversation who have displaced people who no longer can afford to live in this city. Like, this is restorative justice time. This is about all of us changing the conversation. But we all have to get on the same page for us to do this.
Yeah.
Because it can't be us versus them. It's not going to work. It's not. It hasn't worked. We're here.
It never has.
And it's just going to get worse.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm here to do. I'm hoping. You know, I have 2 years to prove myself, right? Because every 2 years I got to run again. But I'm an exponential learner. You know, I wanted to run my campaign. I wanted to learn. We ran an amazing campaign. I got a lot of great feedback about how we did this. So I'm feeling really good.
I'm excited to see what you do. And I'm so happy that you're here representing not only the Latinos in Boston, but the Latinx community everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the Latinas that, you know, have been afraid to run for office. Yeah. And you're here to prove that it's possible.
That's
and
right.
It takes a lot of work, but we're used to it.
Yeah, I worked full time and ran full time. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've always had 2 or 3 jobs. Isn't that nothing new? You know how we be juggling.
I want to talk to you about your mom. How does your mom feel?
Oh my God! Well, you know,
my mom's also she was a janitor.
Yeah,
or she still is.
We cleaned offices together, my mom and I.
My stepdad and I used to too
and
when I was in high school.
So, you know, and the fact that she was undocumented for a period of time, the fact that I didn't know how to speak English, like my mom is incredibly proud. I mean, when she went to cast her vote for me, the first time, it was really super emotional for us, you know, and for me to knowing all that my mom had been through coming here and all the humiliation she had faced, to see me running and to have my name on a ballot that she can vote for her own daughter. I'm just so glad that she was able to see that, you know, and she's still a low wage worker.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, this was like, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And when we won, I think I restored her faith in the American dream, right? Who would have thought? I still don't. I feel like they're going to knock on my door and be like, oh, we were just joking.
Psych. Yeah.
You did not win. We actually made a mistake. Yeah. You need to go. And my mom was at my swearing in. And she cried.
Yeah.
And she's still crying. We both are. We're like, oh, my God, I can't believe we did this. But I think, you know, I wasn't born in this country. And I know what it's like to be an immigrant and to be Latina in these times when there's so much hate towards us.
It's, yeah.
You know, we're here to stay. We ain't going nowhere. And that's it. Let them come for us. We're ready to go. Let's go.
We're ready.
We're ready.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah?
Oh. Well, I just want to thank you so much for your time. I know you're so busy now.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to connect with your audience. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I look forward to seeing what you do and supporting you.
Yeah, likewise.
I can't wait to support you in your next campaign.
Yes.
I will be there with my microphones.
Yes. Yeah. And also...
with my art, too.
With your art. Yeah. Let's think about,
of course.
Because I think, you know, Boston, we have an opportunity to really be the leaders. Because we're the mecca of nonprofits. We're the mecca of college institutions, of the best hospitals. Then we should be out on the map in terms of our cultural institutions and our art as well. And featuring artists like yourself here is important. You know, other folks need to see themselves reflected, and we need more of that. And I don't think we have a lot of Latino artists in Boston, so I'm really glad that you're here showcasing your work.
And they're here.
They just don't have the love or the visibility.
They just don't have the love, but we're here to give them that.
And that's what you're gonna. That's what your piece is doing, is opening up the door for that to happen.
For sure.
So I'm excited.
Thank you so much, Julia.
No, thank you. No, you're the best.
I'm so glad I met you.
Likewise. No, I'm really excited. And I can't believe you have like microphones. Like you guys, if you don't know this, they have like legit microphones and stanzas. It's like so cool. I want this.
I'll send you the link.
Send me the link because I'm about to do this podcast. Look, when you say, oh, we just have a little, I did not know it was this. It's like a whole production. I'm so impressed.
This is dope.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, my God.
And it was recording, right?
Oh, I hope so. If you're interested in watching those YouTube videos, you can simply click on the description of the show and follow the links provided. You can follow Julia at Julia for Boston on all social media platforms, City Councilor Mejia on YouTube, and you can check out juliaforboston.com for more on this determined diva. Send me your emails. If you have any questions or you want some advice, please send your emails to artpeoplepod@gmail.com, and I might read them on a future episode. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and if you like what you've heard, please make sure you rate and review the show. You can follow us on social media at Art People Pod.
Today's episode was produced and edited by me, Justin Favela, with production assistance from Thomas Willis, music from Mike McDonald. And before we go, a few quick announcements and thank yous. A big thank you to Now and There, who was the organization that helped me bring my project Provecho to Boston. It's more of a collaboration because they really helped me put the project together. Thank you to Leah Triplett Harrington, to Kate, to Polina, to everybody that helped with the production, Bianca and her team. It was incredible. So if you are in the Boston area, go to the Prudential Center, main entrance, 800 Boylston, I believe, and you'll see my art piece there. Big thank you to everybody at SOU who helped with studio space and all the students that helped. I can't believe it. We did it. It went up just so smoothly this past Monday night last week, and it'll be up for a couple of months. So again, if you're in the Boston area, it's at the Prudential Center. You won't miss it. Actually, Now and There is going to bring me and my other podcast, Latinos Who Lunch, out to do a live show at BU, I believe, on February 26th. So stay tuned. I'll make more announcements here and on the other show. You can check out nowandthere.org for more information on Provecho. If you are in the Houston, Texas area, I was just there right before Boston installing a piece for a group show called Piñata Aesthetic, curated by my dear friend Josue Ramirez, who's also in the show. And we're there along with artist Giovanni Valderas. All of us work in kind of a piñata style, so that's what the show is all about. Check it out. Again, it's at Art League Houston. I think I always say Houston Art League, but it's Art League Houston. Had a great time in Houston. Thank you to everybody that I met, all the listeners that came out. It was so fun being there. I love you, Houston. Okay. Saludos, amigos. That's the show that I have at the Carson City Courthouse, brought to you by the Capital City Arts Initiative. Thank you so much for having me, Carson City. This is the last week to check it out. So if you're in the Northern Nevada, Reno, Carson City area, check out the courthouse. There's a big installation that I did there. And if you are in the Fort Worth, Texas area, my piece Puente Nuevo is at the Amon Carter Museum of American Art. Check out the Amon Carter. There's cool stuff happening there. I will be back there June 20th to do a big family fiesta performance with my family. We're going to take over. It's going to be so fun. Check them out. Again, Puente Nuevo at the Amon Carter Museum of Art. Nope, Museum of American Art. Okay. That's it. Bye-bye.
And we're back.
Damn, man. This is so inspiring. One of the things that I appreciate more is that understanding community is not understanding just their capacity to vote, but it's understanding the community from the bottom up, understanding that our communities need art, understanding that our communities need so much more than what we see in the surface was really, really interesting. And she's amazing, and she sounds like she's fucking fabulous. So amazing, amazing. Oh, thank you. Thank
amazing.
You for this,
Fabi. Uh-huh. Her energy was so positive, and it just really inspired me. You know, in these days when we feel like our voice isn't being heard, to have somebody like that in that position just is so inspiring. So
right.
Thank you, Julia. You're the best. And we'll be in Boston soon. And speaking of, we're doing a live episode of Latinos Who Lunch in Boston. We're going to be at BU, but we're going to have a special guest, Rosario Uveira Minaya. So come through, Google it, locas. We'll put links on our Instagram and on the website. Look in the episode notes, actually, for this episode, and it will be there, okay? Boston, we're coming. And thank you to all the listeners that I met while I was in Boston. Philip, I really wanted to meet up with you and go to Jacques Cabaret, but I had so many fucking meetings. I couldn't do it. Maybe this time we'll go hang out. And I really want to, I think that's where like Katya started and stuff. It's like this really shitty dive bar. I can't wait to go. Anyway,
nice.
Boston, I love you. Thank you for all the support. It's been really amazing working with the art community out there. Okay. Let's talk about recommendations. Babalito, do you have any?
I am entranced with Colombian and music from Spain, but more specifically like flamenco alternatives. And there's so many from like queer flamenco to like radical ass flamenco, such as Califato Tres Cuartos. And that's how you spell it. Califato 3/4. And they came out with an album. I never really heard him before, but because I got so much into Niño de Elche, which by the way, I'm going to go see in Washington, D.C., that I started getting all these recommendations for this, you know, like alternative flamenco music. And this album, Puerta de la Cane, came in. And the second I heard the first song, I died. This album just came out in December 4th. And it combines everything. Everything the 90s made popular, it's in this fucking album. From electronica to breakbeat to drum and bass, there's a little bit of reggaeton. Combined with a flamenco, there's a little bit of alternative 90s, British fucking rock like Stone Roses. It is a beautiful album, and it's radical, radical, radical as shit. There's like all this Islamic influence in the background of every single song. So there's a sense of this radicalism that you don't hear from fucking your Rosalías of the world, right? So again, if you want to get to the root where all these artists are coming from, because there's so much more happening in Spain besides Rosalía, check it out. Again, the album Califato 3/4 or Califato 3/4, and the album is Puerta de la Cane. Get into it and let me know if you like it, because it is an album that first I was like, what the fuck is this? And now I can't stop listening. So that is my recommendation for this week. What about you?
Yeah, so I am going to recommend a podcast by Ron Funches. It's called Getting Better. And it is an interesting podcast. He is a comedian. I just love his voice. And so I heard him on another podcast. And then actually, I'm obsessed with Nicole Byer. And she has like 4 podcasts that I listen to. And he was on Why Won't You Date Me? And so then from there, I found his podcast. And he's a nerd and he likes wrestling. So he has a lot of wrestling, like a lot of wrestlers on his podcast. I don't know.
That's cool.
Or he'll have big celebrities on too. Like last week, he had Conan O'Brien on his show. And they basically sit down and they're funny, but they have serious conversations about mental health and wellness. Nice. From a comedian's perspective. And he struggled with drugs, he struggled with alcohol, he struggled with weight, and it's just getting better. It's called Getting Better, and how he kind of navigates through the comedy world, and how he's trying to be 100% authentically himself. And it's really inspiring just to hear his day-to-day and how he kind of deals with his... with his vices and how he's healing and how, you know, his relationship with his son. And it's a really cool podcast. And I mean, if you listen to the Listener Letters episode last week, we talked about like men being in touch with their feelings and how that like frowned upon because hello, toxic masculinity, right? Right. Hello, darkness, my old friend. But he's a person that's breaking through and just being like, you know what? I cry and I have feelings and this is what I go through and this is the struggle and this, and you know, so it's really nice to hear that and, you know, support POC podcast. Shout out to Barry at Podcasts in Color, hashtag pod in, hashtag pods in color.
Hashtag you know, thank you, comadre.
yes, exactly. And Barry's one of our comadres. Again, Getting Better with Ron Funches. That's one of my recs. This month or this week, I don't know what we're doing anymore. Okay, let's end the show. But before before we do, shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. Shout out to our PayPal supporters. We couldn't do this without you. We really appreciate all of your help. And if you want to be part of the Latinos Who Lunch family, you can go on Patreon or donate. Actually, you're already part of family because you know you have some of those tios that they never contribute. They never contribute to the carne asada, but they show up and they share their love. And that's what we love them for, that, because they're always the first ones to flip the tortillas or get on the grill, you know, and that's their contribution. And that can be your contribution, too, by subscribing to the show, by rating and reviewing us, by telling a friend about us. Let's get to 1,000 reviews on iTunes. I don't know if we have that. We might already have that many, but if we don't, let's get there. And so please, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I don't know if you can rate on Spotify, but
I don't think so. I've tried.
Yeah, no. Stitcher. I don't know. Wherever you listen, please rate us 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Manuel Ortega, with production assistance from Maita Sosa. And the music you're listening to now is by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.